This is WFYI HD2 Indianapolis, The Point.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Film lovers, welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, working the board with, hopefully, is it done yet?
We got 1 hour in the final hour.
The final hour of the fall membership drive.
That's right.
Not the Juan Williams Defense Fund. Kobe Slagle's working the board.
Hello, hello.
And by the way, I didn't fire him.
I didn't
fire him. Nobody here.
Nope.
Nobody here at FYI fired him. Let's move on.
Okay.
Sitting in with me today, Ben Traub, who's also standing after you've been working all day on the other side of the glass. I'm sorry, his mic is not on. Go to the other one.
I'll walk over here. I've been standing up for 2 weeks and walking around this.
You're allowed to.
Months.
You may stand. That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. I did not fire Juan Williams either.
You didn't fire Juan Williams.
I asked PJ O'Rourke to fire Juan Williams.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, he did.
And Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap.
How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Good. And I did fire Juan Williams.
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't.
But you.
No one associated with this affiliate had anything to do with it.
Just keep that in mind. But you did tell me one thing that you were concerned about.
What was that? Oh, about, well, I've got my own fears, anxieties, whatever you want to call them. Just don't call me a bigot. It's film critics. They make me nervous. When I see them in the theater with their glasses and their notepads and their...
And their token girl.
Their beard, yeah.
And their beard. Well, I shave. That's why I shave mine, because, you know, I don't want to look like whatever.
Oh.
And a special hello to Mark and Mackenzie. So, yeah, we're all nervous. All right. Okay, now that we've gotten the current events out of the way, let's move on to something that is opening in theaters today. I don't know if it's opening in October for a reason. I sure as heck hope not after we got to see this on Tuesday evening. It's a new film from octogenarian filmmaker Clint Eastwood. The man is 80, ladies and gentlemen, and there was a pretty decent write-up in the a Wire story in today's Not Nouveau about Mr. Eastwood. And his new film is called Hereafter, and it's about, well, the afterlife, sort of. It's three intertwining stories. Matt Damon's involved. Jay Maher. Not since Michael McKean in True Crime, I've been, really? You're working with Clint Eastwood?
Yeah.
Wow. And a few other folks. Oh, and Derek Jacobi has a cameo, but that really has nothing to do with the review. So here's the audio.
Doing this.
For a while, had an office, a website, newspaper articles, even had a book written about him.
So what happened?
Couldn't cope.
Can I ask you a question?
The job I had before was as a psychic.
Do the work and you'll go far.
What do you think happens when we die?
Send a hope upon a worry.
I recognize you. You're that psychic.
I have news for you. I don't do it anymore.
Wish before the grave.
I give you my word. I won't tell anyone.
You have a duty to do it because you have a gift.
It's not a gift, Billy. It's a curse.
I think you experienced death.
After seeing this film, I watched the trailer a couple of times because there was semi-heated discussion after the screening about Warner Brothers and their handling of the advertising of this picture. Watching it now in hindsight, I guess, okay, it's not as obvious, I guess, or for lack of a... But I was wondering why they were booking this film as a supernatural thriller, which it's not even close to being.
Or didn't you say that you felt like that they played up the romantic elements? I actually even read somebody, I can't remember who called it a romantic drama.
Well, what I said was, I started comparing it to, because when we were at the screening on Tuesday night, there were at least 8 or 9 teenagers that stormed out about halfway through, because I think they were expecting The Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
And it kind of, from the trailer, it does kind of get that vibe. But that's not the case. And then I remembered saying that I think a lot of people are going to be irritated by this film because of the trailer. And I said it's probably going to rank right up there with being angry at Clint Eastwood when he made The Bridges of Madison County. And I said that if Warner Brothers actually made a trailer for what this film is, it would kind of come off like Clint Eastwood's Ghost.
Yeah, I think the problem may be that Clint Eastwood has developed this habit really since. Gosh, like I guess the last 10 years, where we know he has a movie coming out, but we don't really hear anything about it until really right before. There aren't a lot of advanced screenings. He doesn't go to the festivals with them anymore. I don't think
bully for him. I think on that,
and I don't think I even saw a trailer for Hereafter up until about 3 weeks ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is, people don't really have expectations except for what they get in that last 2 weeks before it opens, which is dictated by the marketing of whatever studio.
Right.
And, of course, the marketing department, is also often working without having actually seen the film themselves, or at least not the entirety of it.
That's not helping.
Yeah. And so they may end up sort of misdirecting some people to this. I don't know. I still found it a worthwhile film. But
I agree. No, I agree. I did enjoy this film. You have three storylines. You have the Matt Damon character who is a former psychic, and he's kind of like Unforgiven, kind of just lured back into the one more job or a couple of jobs. And then there's a French reporter, and I checked out, it's a Cécile de France.
Yep.
Yes, that is her actual name. For you fans of High Tension and the Jackie Chan Around the World in 80 Days, where she survives a tsunami. And by the way, the first 10 minutes of this film, really
riveting
CGI used for good. It's a tsunami just wash over.
Yes,
that's really. I mean, it really jerked a lot of people in the audience. It was really
I'm
good.
So upset at some guy who went to get popcorn and walked right in front of me, right when she apparently got something happened to her. And I had to actually ask the people around me what just happened to her because some idiot with a popcorn was in front of me.
Other people.
Who goes to get popcorn within the first 10 minutes of a movie?
That's why you get it before. But that's neither here nor there. And then there's an English boy who's identical twin, and it's played by two boys.
And they both play interchangeable parts.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. He should hang out with the guy from The Social Network. Frankie and George McLaren play the twins and the boy dealing with the death of his brother and trying to get in contact with him. So you have these three stories, three stories that don't really connect until the last maybe 20-30 minutes of the picture. So it's kind of, I guess, Eastwood doing an Altman thing with three different stories. I liked all three. Probably for me the bigger sin than the advertising is the way, and I don't want to give anything away, but the way these three stories wind up meeting.
Yeah.
It's a real, real stretch.
Yeah.
And but then after it happens, it's okay. It goes right back into how, you know, the mingling of the three people, and it's fine. So you really gotta let go of, I'll just say, a book fair scene. That's all I can really. Once you get there, just coast the rest of the time. It'll be fine.
But it has Derek Jacobi playing Derek Jacobi. So
I want to go to these book fairs that has like Shakespearean actors yes. doing readings. That's cool.
And where if you're Matt Damon, you can just grab a book and have it sign and walk out with it without paying for it.
You did notice that. I see. See, that's like my favorite. That's my favorite Clint Eastwood snafu since Gran Torino, because the one I love in Gran Torino is he's invited next door for a party, and the young girl hands him a Tsing Tao, which is a fine Chinese beer, not an underwriter, but fine nonetheless, and he twists off the cap. Well, I remember seeing the movie, and I went home and I grabbed the six of them because advertising works, and I went to and they're not twist offs.
Yeah.
That's an import. Most imported beers are not twist off, so that just adds to the awesomeness of Clint Eastwood. He could rip a beer cap off. So,
I didn't quite feel the same. I did feel that the third leg with the boys was kind of weak. We never really got a sense of why this kid had such an obsession with, you know, reaching past the void to talk to his brother. I mean, we never got the sense that they had such a just incredible close connection that he felt he had to continue it. So, and just in general, you know, he's presented as being a smart kid. A typical thing movies do is they present a character and say, this person's really smart, as demonstrated by the little switcheroo they do with the social workers come to call upon and catch their mother drunk, and they do this little, obviously very bright kids.
But could he hang out with the kids for millions?
I interviewed one of the
kids. I know you did. I know. Alex Attell.
Yes.
Very cool.
On the film map for the Heartland. but anyway, so they show him as being a smart kid, but then he's going to all these obviously fake psychics. And I would think that such a smart kid would be able to figure out, even walking in, that they're going to be fake.
I think that was the screenwriter's little dig on psychics as we know it. They're not all named John Edwards.
Yeah. And we should mention, Peter Morgan, original screenplay by him, who has just been on some kind of unholy tear the last 4 or 5 years.
The Queen,
The Last King
of Scotland, Frost Nixon.
The Damn United.
Yeah, that's not a bad streak right there. Not a bad streak of movies.
Yeah, not since William Goldman from about 1969 to 1977 has there been a streak like this from a screenwriter.
Kobe, I think you're going to have to IMDb Mr. Goldman so you can see some future titles you'll be watching. So we'll see about that. So, Ben, any interest in Hereafter from an audience standpoint?
I
want to
know. I still haven't heard like the Eastwoodian stamp on it.
Oh, it's the score.
Yeah.
The music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But no, what's great has been Clint can, he besides being 80, but he can make whatever the hell he wants.
Well, that's the thing you guys were talking about earlier about the marketing of it. It's like, oh, I'm not going to go see this new Woody Allen film until I see a trailer for it. You know what you're getting. And it might have a nice little twist on something you've seen before, but with Eastwood, it's like, it's like buying a book by your favorite author or someone that you might kind of like. You know that you're going to get something quality out of it, and it may not be that first time where you're like, this is a great person and I really like their work, but you're still going to come out of it with having gotten some sort of artistic statement thrown at you.
I agree, and this is a minor note picture, just like his last film, Invictus, was a minor note picture for me.
Oh, wait, I forgot he did that movie.
Yeah, I know, some of the world's slowest rugby matches ever. I heard Sam Peckinpah jump out of his grave and say, hey, speed it up. I know. And it got two nominations. A little bit of a stretch, and probably not my choosing. But you know, at times I'm a sucker for a good sports movie when it's not 2 hours. I mean, this thing could have been at least 20 minutes shorter with the last 20 minutes.
I agree, and I don't know how you structure, but you know, I would probably eliminate the storyline with the kids and focus on the George Lonergan, the Matt Damon character. And the French broadcaster.
And she has a near, you know, she sees the light, and there's the little old lady, the little lady from Poltergeist, and all the others out, and
Zelda?
Then she comes back. Yeah, she's there.
Oh, really?
Or maybe it was not Helen Hunt, Linda Hunt. It was Linda. That's terrible. Bad. So I love the fact that he's still making fairly ambitious pictures, even if they're not, you know, Letters of Our Fathers or Unforgiven or Mystic River or something like that. I mean, a minor note, Eastwood is still,
I think,
everything
better. You've said, I mean, just the listing of the movies that he's done in the last 15 years, he never phones it in.
No.
And he's 80.
No, even, you know, I got concerned with Gran Torino, but he was able to just...
Awesome.
Yes, it is awesome. As our buddy Ed called it, an R-rated after-school special. So, yeah, go. Kobe, are you done over there? Go check this out.
Now that was a good movie!
You're just going to have to explain to a lot of people that it's not scary. That's all.
Yeah, it's as I said in my review, which you can... Actually, no, you can't read it on the film yet, because Joe Shearer wrote the review.
Oh.
But if you look out there, you'll find it.
Yes.
You know, it's much less a movie about the metaphysics of the beyond and dying and all that. It's not like, what was the Peter Jackson movie, The Lovely Bones. It's not about that perspective. It's about the people left behind on Earth dealing with
death. I thought that movie was about nobody figuring out that Stanley Tucci is a child molester and killer.
No, nobody figuring out that the strange guy who never talks to anybody.
And builds dollhouses.
Yes, no, nothing wrong with him.
No, not at all. Well, so, all right. When it comes to dropping the ball on advertising, how does this rank with, say, Marley and Me and Inglourious Basterds?
I don't think it's too egregious. It's not like Inglourious Basterds, which I still hold up as, you know, a movie called Inglourious Basterds that was all about Brad Pitt and the gang in the trailers, and then they were in the movie for maybe 15 minutes.
Maybe 20.
Okay, I'll give you maybe 20.
All right.
But compared with, like, Marley and Me, I think Marley and Me actually fairly represented what it was about.
Really? Really?
Not as badly as, Inglourious Basterds.
I don't remember seeing anything that it maybe gives a hint that for good or for better or for worse when it comes to owning a little puppy. You know, no Jennifer Aniston character having a miscarriage, no dog dying, and there's no hint of that whatsoever.
It's family romp.
It's not a family. It's not Beethoven. It is so not Beethoven.
Another awesome movie. No, but
you're just
yet.
Saying that.
But it's a question of. But Marley and Me brings up a good point of, like, how much can you trust the marketing?
Yeah. My child wanted to see that. I'm like, you've seen Hamlet and Macbeth, and I'm not showing you Marley and Me. Are you kidding? I'll show you Old Yeller. At least you know what's happening with that.
Yeah. I liked Marley and Me. I put it
did
on,
you?
I put it on my top 10 list for
you
2008. Yes,
get out. Really?
Yep.
Really?
If for no other reason, I thought it was one of the few movies that fairly represented what the life of a journalist is like.
Oh, that part. Yeah, well, stop putting a damn ribbon around the dog's neck and put it on the poster. All right, let's move on to something else. Speaking of Heartland, a film that got the Truly Moving Pictures stamp of approval, and you got to see it, is Conviction with, let's see, one Oscar winner, three Oscar nominees, Sam Rockwell, and Peter Gallagher's eyebrows. So tell us a little bit about it.
So Conviction, this is directed by Tony Goldwyn, who's in fairly well-known actor.
Speaking of Ghost, and now a director in his own right.
Yeah, got a fairly long list of credits, mostly TV, but some movies.
What was the Diane Lane, Viggo Mortensen,
Walk in the Clouds?
Walk in the Clouds.
Yeah,
or
walk, 90s.
Walk in the Moon.
Walk in the Moon, something like that. There was Moon and Clouds and Walk.
And he's a blouse salesman.
Yeah. And it's based on a true story about a woman, Betty Ann Waters, who was, you know, a working-class, blue-collar girl, didn't even graduate from high school, who went to college and got a law degree and became a lawyer specifically to get her brother sprung from jail, who was sentenced on a what turned out to be false murder rap. And he's played by Sam Rockwell, Kenny Waters.
Right.
And so it's basically a, you know, very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Truly moving.
Yes, it is. It is truly moving. And it's a very straightforward movie, and it's a movie that ends up having no surprises, just because we know what's going to happen, and it doesn't really throw any surprises along the way, other than ones they just invent. I was actually doing a little Googling on this. You know, like they find the evidence that, you know, will prove his innocence just over 1 hour into the runtime of the movie.
Okay.
But they have to, you know, pad out another 45 minutes or so. So they come up with this whole concoction about how that the prosecutor, Martha Coakley, if you remember her from the loss to Scott Brown in the special Senate election some months ago, that basically, you know, she had just delayed things and it was actually like a year and change before he was let, you know, and it's all this dramaturgy in the movie about, you know, we've got to do this and find testimony and give him the recant. And in fact, it was nothing like that. As soon as the blood evidence was found, he was released within about 2 weeks.
And then had a bad turn, which they...
Yes,
I know
which
they
did not say. Unfortunately, Kenny Waters had a fall and died about 6 months after being released from prison for 18 years. And for whatever reason, you know, this is, as you might guess...
I was told they originally did have it in and they took it out.
Yeah, and they don't even mention it. This is the type of movie, as you might guess, that, you know, has title cards in that says, this is what happened to Betty Ann Waters, this is what happened to Barry Scheck and the Innocence Project, and so forth, and doesn't say what happened to Kenny. And it really is a strange... thing to do, to not even comment about them. And I think that would have been a nice coat on the movie. Like, here's a guy who spent almost half his life wrongly incarcerated, you know, and he enjoyed some months of freedom before tragically dying.
Now, with the story being predictable, sometimes the performances can help save that. How's the cast?
Well, very, very good, obviously, with the two we just mentioned there. Sam Rockwell, who, you know, he's one of those guys that most people don't know his name, maybe they don't even know his face, but for my money, I think, you know, actors of his generation, I think he's right there at the top.
Yes.
He was in the movie Moon from last year, which I tell everybody, go
rent
Moon.
Yeah, you gotta go rent Moon. And I think he broke the that guy status for me with Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
It was just a riot in that. And then, of course, he got a huge break with a film that still not enough people have seen, Confessions
of a
Dangerous Mind.
Oh, and a great performance in an underrated movie. But he's really good in this, in that, you know, he reaches a point where he doesn't want to go on in the movie, and his sister is just absolutely keeping him alive, saying, look, we've got to keep fighting. And she's like, we've got this evidence, or we'll find this blood evidence. And he's like, oh, it's going to test positive because they're going to rig the system against me just like we did before. And it's a very, on the one hand, it's a very charming character, but you see the weight of the years in prison getting to him. And so it's a very layered and textured performance. And then Hilary Swank, this is obviously a very much a straightforward Oscar bait kind of
and
performance.
Is she the executive producer on this?
Yes, she is.
Okay, so she seems to put her production code on some of those, like Freedom Riders.
Yeah, I would say this movie is very much in that vein of, you know, so showing an ordinary person doing heroic things under, you know, extraordinary circumstances.
I'm still waiting for her to star in the Cat Cora story. And Jane Lynch in the Candace Olsen story. Friends of Food Network and HGTV know exactly what I'm talking about. We'll move on. So, Ben, favorite Rockwell moment? Besides somebody who's watching me?
Man, name another if you can. No, I'm like... and
Frost,
you guys
he's
talk
good
about
Frost Nixon. Frost he comes Nixon. Off the bench for a few shots.
He did the film version of Polonick's Choke a few years
That's
ago.
That's right.
And
I think all, well, you didn't, but at least the three of us saw it.
I didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't. I'm sorry, two of us saw it.
And it was a great, I mean, I had read that when I was on tour, like in 6 hours, and I thought it was a really fun book, and it just didn't translate well into a film thing. But he can still put his stamp on it, and I just saw Moon a few months ago.
Good
as
for
well,
you.
And it's, it, that is, I mean, if you see a... It reminded me that you don't have to have a big budget to make a sci-fi movie, one. Like in the 60s. And two, that if you've got an actor that can actually say the words with feeling, it really helps. So I'm in total agreeance. I think he's got a really long legacy to still build upon. But
agreed.
He's moving in the right direction.
Cool.
I'd like to see him do some stage work, but I hardly ever get out of the city, so good luck to me.
Yes, good luck to you.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, by the way, Paranormal Activity 2 opened, but they didn't screen it for the press. So.
No. Although if you go to the filmyap.com, Nick Rogers, one of our intrepid
correspondents. Did he go at 10:30 this morning?
No, I think he's going tonight. So hopefully by tonight, maybe tomorrow morning, we'll have a review up there.
Okay, very good. All right, we're going to take a short break and talk about some titles that are on DVD and Blu-ray. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
any good. Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. A couple shameless plugs tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow at 3 and 7:30 at Scottish Rite Cathedral. Neil Simon's Plaza Suite, directed by yours truly. And Sunday at 1 o'clock, I'll be at Easley Winery, 205 North College Avenue, 1 o'clock, and I'll be discussing scary movies and drinking wine. I know, a scary concept in and of itself. So hope to see you guys out there. Kobe Slagle's working the board. Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap and Ben Traub at WFYI are sitting in. See, kind of almost afterglow of the fall drive. So
is this glow?
Almost.
No, it's, well, as glow as it can be.
Yeah.
Got a few titles that open up this week on DVD and some classic titles on Blu-ray. But the one film I got to see that came out this week is the latest from Disney Earth Productions, Oceans, because I have an 8-year-old at home that likes to look at pretty fish. And that's kind of what it is. It's lots of undersea activities with pretty fish, and it's narrated by Pierce Brosnan. And, you know, you get a little message maybe the last 15, 20 minutes about how the Earth is in bad shape, despite all the glorious color photography of the first hour. I enjoy these. I don't think that as many people saw this one as they did Earth, and I just saw the trailer for African Cats. So that'll be coming out. So if you have children or you like to have hallucinogenics while watching movies, I think Oceans is definitely up your alley. So there.
Is it something that if you have a really nice TV, you can just have on in the background?
Yes, as opposed to the screensaver of a fish tank.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, exactly. So,
cool.
Hey, Kobe, can I get my audio if you're done?
Kobe's double dutching.
He is double dutching. That has nothing to do. No, I meant my reaction to the film, not the trailer itself. It's wow, I caught you off guard, didn't I, sir?
Play. Now that was a good movie.
Focus, sir. Focus. Yes. So, Oceans is out, and you got to see Please Give, right, Chris?
Yeah, this was the latest from, and I am going to butcher her last name. Do you have to pronounce her last name? Nicole Holofcener?
That sounds good.
She's
Nikki.
Smart guy.
And she makes a lot of movies with Catherine Keener.
Friends with Money.
My Friends with Money.
Kicking and Screaming.
Lovely and Amazing.
That's it, Lovely and Amazing.
She's been pretty, been working for about 15 years, making a lot of good movies. I didn't think this was her best one.
But it's reassuring that Oliver Platt could be married to somebody like Catherine Keener.
Yes.
That's always good.
Yes. It's Oliver Platt, and as I say, there's no such thing as bad Oliver Platt. You know, Oliver Platt
ready to rumble.
Any movie.
Ready
and
to rumble.
And it improves.
Ready to rumble.
Still enjoyable.
Really?
I'm just saying.
Courtney Cox didn't even see that film.
Ooh.
I'm just saying, you know, it would have been that much worse without Oliver Platt.
Oh, I see. Yeah. All right. Whatever. Go on.
It's a difficult movie to describe. It's a black comedy, which I think a lot of people who have seen it have completely misread. If you read Roger Ebert's review of it, he talks about how the Catherine Keener character is this just wonderful person. I think he completely misread the movie, that, you know, the movie is making fun of her because she just cannot stop herself from giving. You know, she's constantly giving money to people on the streets and wanting to do charitable work, but, you know, like, she goes to volunteer in an old folks' home, but she's such a downer that they ask her to leave because she's depressing all the old people with her pity.
The universe is expanding.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, wrong.
So this is a woman who's addicted to pity. She's a bit addicted to the act of pitying others. You've probably seen the most famous clip that was shown from the trailers is where she's offering her leftover dinner to some guy in the street.
And he's actually waiting for...
And he's like, I'm waiting for a table at, you know, the expensive restaurant in front of him that he motions to, yeah.
And then there's the whole thing about trying to get an apartment.
Yeah.
From Mary Tyler Moore's old best friend,
yes.
From
they have
Millie.
A 91 neighbor who lives next door to them, and they have already... I'm not sure if they've already bought her apartment or arranged to buy her apartment, but it's a done deal that as soon as this woman dies... They will get the apartment and knock through the walls and make a huge master suite.
Wasn't this duplex? Wasn't this the bad Danny DeVito thing with Ben Stiller and Drew Barrymore? Didn't they already do this?
Sounds like it.
Okay.
The basic idea, and then you have a couple of the granddaughters of the woman next door, played by
Amanda Pete,
and the gal, she was actually in The Town, Rebecca Hall.
Ah, okay.
And Rebecca Hall's really good in it. Again, no such thing as bad Rebecca Hall. And it's just so this disparate group of characters, the basic gist seems to be, it seems to be very much about New York and the New York mentality, and about how even when people seem to be nice and charitable, they're in some ways in competition with each other. So it's a hard movie to really describe. I should mention the business that the Catherine Keener and Oliver Platt characters who are married to each other have. Is that they buy up furniture from old people who have died and then resell it at an outrageous markup.
Wow.
So maybe her whole giving thing is like, you know, a defense mechanism for essentially being high-end ambulance chasers, if you will.
That's one way of putting it.
It's a wonderfully shot movie, wonderful performances, as I said, from, you know, Catherine Keener, Oliver Platt on down, Rebecca Hall and Amanda Pete. Just never quite really got into the groove of the movie, never really identified with the characters and really figured what it was all about.
Okay. Now, we got some old titles to come up. The one that's we're most excited about, because you brought yours and I have mine at home, it is the Blu-ray release of Francis Coppola's masterpiece, Apocalypse Now, and it comes three discs with new stuff.
It's the full disclosure version. Several versions on DVD, I think maybe on Blu-ray as well.
The confidential,
yes,
version, yeah, with the little thing that looks like a Maker's Mark logo.
I haven't seen the other versions, so I can't say if this is, you know, the James Cameron thing of just keep releasing new editions to get some more money.
No, if that was the case, Coppola would try to put it in 3D.
Yeah.
No, this has the theatrical release. It has Redux from 2001, and it has a bunch of new features, a commentary by Coppola. So you'll hear Coppola say at least 10 or 20 times that he was almost fired, because he does that with every commentary he does. And one of my all-time favorite documentaries, Hearts of Darkness, which I actually remember seeing in theaters when I was in college. Not only one of my favorite documentaries of all time, but one of the best films about filmmaking.
Yeah.
I remember there was a lot of press about the making of this film when it was in trouble then. And it's one of those, could you imagine 24-hour news now with that? Thank God. And now, on top of all that, he creates what I think is, you know, just a stunning piece of work, of course, based on the Hearts of Darkness, Joseph Conrad story, only he sets it in Vietnam. And
yeah, and it's just a mere launching point of the novel to the book, I think, or the novel to the movie. I think he just completely, you know, it's one of those things that he just completely starts off from one launching point and goes to a whole nother pond, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And this is one where, again, it's the fact that he pulls it off. It won a few Oscars, got a bunch of nominations. It was funny if this happened before Heaven's Gate, and of course,
yes,
Heaven's Gate, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And then I think he went to the well one too many times with One from the Heart, but
yeah,
there's some merit for that one as well.
It's really interesting how this movie has become rehabilitated. I mean, people forget that at the time that all this stuff was going on, and even when it came out, it was considered something of a disaster. It did get a lot of positive write-ups. It did get some Oscar nominations, but people were expecting it to be the Vietnam movie. And it
didn't help that The Deer Hunter had won Best Picture the year before, and
no.
Coming Home was also there.
Right. We had all these movies that, you know, people thought was the definitive Vietnam movie, and it was really more about stories that just happened to be set in Vietnam and affecting characters in Vietnam. Probably wasn't until Platoon in 1986 that there was the definitive about the Vietnam experience.
Correct.
I mean, whatever you want to say about Apocalypse Now, it's brilliant, but I don't think it's about the American experience in Vietnam.
Oh, no, not at all. You know, between mumbling Brand. Well, when is Brando not mumbling? And you know, the great bits by Robert Duvall and Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper.
I think we played. Yeah, that was a part of his tribute when he died. I played a few clips on that, albeit edited. You know, Martin Sheen really taking one for the team in all sorts of ways, having a heart attack on the film.
A couple of random observations. So I'm looking here at the three-disc Blu-ray set from the Full Disclosure version.
Yes.
Has pictures of Martin Sheen, Brando, and...
Lawrence Fishburne.
Cornbread
Earl and Me.
Yes.
He was 14.
He was 14 when they made this movie. Very interesting. You know, I'm always fascinated by things like facts about movies, like things like ages and height and stuff like this, about how it's different from your perception through the filter of the movie, you know, that he was playing, obviously, a young soldier, but he was 14 years old shooting this. On the other hand, I always love to point this out, Martin Sheen was, I think, 40, in his mid-40s when they shot this, and obviously, I think, was playing and looked much, much younger.
Much younger.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in good shape, you know, except for the drinking and the heart attack. But,
yes.
But other than that, and I think he lost the weight, and Brando took it.
Yeah.
Being large and not reading anything, not knowing anything about it, just the thing about the Redux, which I remember I was snarky enough to call it the best film of 2001. The film that I probably should have that title is on Blu-ray, and I'll get to that in a little bit, and so you guys can make fun of me. It wasn't just extra footage of Brando in the shadows just mumbling incoherently. There's a whole section in a French plantation that's lost in time that I really, really enjoyed. There's a little extra moment with the Playboy bunnies. No, not that. And the stealing of Robert Duvall's surfboard, which is just amusing as hell. So I really, really enjoyed the Redux. And Hearts of Darkness is just great. And I'm stunned that they're married, especially with his wife filming and recording all of this colossal disaster happening around them. But bully for all of them.
Charlie, don't surf.
That's right. Okay, a few other titles that are on DVD. This is the film. This was number two on my best of 2001 list, and it's on Blu-ray, Moulin Rouge.
Oh, yeah.
I really enjoy I also blame it for all of the ADD-induced musicals that have come out since.
Right.
But at the time,
it was groundbreaking.
Yeah, and the fact of the sheer nerve of everybody just going balls out with this ridiculous, caffeinated style of musical theater.
Yeah, and
musical cinema, I should
say. The singing and the soundtrack, you know, Ewan McGregor, if you had asked me before, can Ewan McGregor sing, I would have said, no.
He's too busy being naked and climbing in toilets.
Yeah. But like, you know, his wasn't it "Come With May" that he does one of the big duets with Nicole Kidman?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have that soundtrack. I play it in the car. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Good, very good. But you still won't let me up about 9, right? That's what I thought.
That's got Penelope Cruz in it.
Yes, it does.
I like Penelope Cruz.
Yeah, but I'm not going to talk about her with you guys in here. Speaking of Lawrence Fishburne, Predators, the film that Robert Rodriguez didn't direct but he produced, and it's him and Adrian Brody, and
I did not see it. It actually arrived yesterday in the mail, 2 days after it came out in video. I keep trying to explain to the video companies that why do you bother me sending me a video 2 days after it came out? I can't review it in time.
That's all right.
But Adrian Brody, two Oscar contending,
one winner and one actor. And
how were they convinced?
Remember, there were four Oscar winners in Red. Okay, let's not forget that. So,
but that was actually a good movie. I mean, how did they convince these guys to be in Predators 4?
Because Bill Duke wasn't available, or Carl Weathers, or Sonny Landham, or Jesse Ventura.
Carl Weathers is busy teaching acting.
And he's also in a Bud Light commercial, which is fairly amusing. So,
I interviewed Sonny Landham back when he was
so
in town.
I interviewed
did
Sonny
you,
as well. Yeah, he's a
that,
trip.
That was fun.
He said things about the governor that I had to edit out, and it was edited out poorly because everybody was chuckling, and I thought, I got to cut that.
He and Sylvester Stallone got their starts in porn films.
Yes, they did. We talked about that.
Softcore. Not any.
Oh, I'm sorry. We stand corrected, Ben.
I don't know. I'm just trying
to. You want a correspondent job?
No,
also on Blu-ray from 20th Century Fox, Baz Luhrmann's other film, Romeo and Juliet, which, well, if it gets kids interested in the Bard, it does something.
It was a bold movie.
Ambitious. Don't agree with everything, but...
You know, Sure. I loved how they used, like, the pull out your sword, and the sword was then, you know, guns, the brand of pistol that they had. Yeah.
My missus had issues with, you know, hallucinogenics being used as the way of meeting the love of your life.
Was that supposed to be, like, on Venice Beach? Was that the idea?
Verona Beach.
Verona Beach.
That's right.
But it was a stand-in for
and
Venice Beach.
And nurses who yell, Julieta. And by the way, Pete Postlethwaite rocks in that film. He's brilliant as Father Lawrence.
Forget
love Pete Postlethwaite.
Can I just say that you
Please.
Shouldn't watch that I hate that movie.
You hate
because
it.
Because it ushered in an age. It ushered in an age of girls being able to walk around the mall with fairy wings on.
I'm sorry. How long did that last?
It still happens, man.
Okay, why are you going to malls?
See how long those girls are going to be wearing fairy wings.
Now you sound like Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused.
Yeah,
I get older, they stay younger.
Yeah. Same age.
Also on 20th Century Fox Blu-ray, a film that The Onion said the fact that it became available on video killed a midnight movie, The Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh.
That's always fun.
And what about Psycho?
I was getting to that.
I was gonna say.
Did you ever go to Rocky at midnight?
Oh yeah.
Ben?
No, because guess what? I had it on video. Really? They're saying that making something available means it won't ever be shown in the theater again?
It takes some of the journey out of trying to find it or traveling an hour or 2 hours out from your small town to Chicago to Detroit to go see it.
Yeah, but the understanding of that movie is that it's best enjoyed in that situation. So if someone gets a copy of it and they're like, well, this movie's kind of okay, and then their friend says, no, you have to see it with 300 people that know everything about
like,
it. That's what's
like,
going to make
well,
it
Well, yeah. and the film that is that The Onion also said single-handedly brought back the midnight movie, The Room. Mm. We'll talk about that another time. Yes, finally on Universal Blu-ray, Psycho, 50 years.
I've got
Hard
American Psycho on Blu-ray.
Oh, good for you.
Let me knock something, Mr. Hitchcock, off his pedestal a little bit. I really...
Oh, you did this already? Yes, sorry. You wiped your nose with the auteur theory.
Yeah, well, I really don't consider Psycho to be one of Hitchcock's best films.
You
I think
don't.
I think other than the absolutely brilliant shower sequence, which, you know, in of itself, you know, will linger cinematically forever, I just don't think it's, particularly the last half of it, I don't think it's as compelling as people remember.
The death of Martin Balsam?
Mm. But
Janet Leigh's first scene?
Yeah. But do a shameless plug here. Go to the film. We've got reviews of both Psycho, the 50th anniversary edition, and also coming out this same week, documentary The Psycho Legacy, all about the effects of the film, which we also have a video review of that on the film.
And didn't you also on the film app do a piece on one of my favorite that guys, Brian Cox?
Yes, we did.
Love Brian Cox.
That guy is a semi-regular feature we're doing about... It's sort of like people like Sam Rockwell, who people may not recognize the name, but they probably recognize the face, and once the person gets going, they'll certainly recognize the voice. And Brian Cox, Danny Trejo from Machete was the first
and
that
Brian
guy.
Cox is younger than Danny Trejo.
Probably is.
Yeah. Well, Cox had a really fun couple of scenes as a Russian mobster in Red, and he gets to, you know, get close to Helen Mirren, the lucky bastard.
Yes, and he's named Ivan, and as Roger Ebert pointed out, all Russian ex-Russian agents are named Ivan in the movies.
My favorite thing about hearing about Cox, besides him playing Daphne's dad on Frasier, but the story was the press tried to create a rivalry when Silence of the Lambs came out, and he completely dismissed it and said, no, it's fine. You know, he was a pro. He had other things to do. But apparently Brian Cox played Hannibal Lecter in Manhunter, the Michael Mann film from 1986.
Much smaller part than...
Smaller part, but still, looking back at it, still pretty effective couple scenes there.
Yeah.
But at the time he was doing that, apparently Anthony Hopkins was in London doing King Lear. Well, guess what play Mr. Cox was doing when Silence of the Lambs came out in 1991? That's kind of cool. Plus, the man chews scenery like nobody's business when the script is proper for that, like Troy and the X-Men 2 sequel. So,
yeah.
Fun
He's
stuff.
Terrific actor. I always love seeing him.
And there's a YouTube clip of him teaching a baby to be or not to be from Hamlet.
Yeah.
I think it's called Brian Cox Masterclass.
One of my favorite roles of his was in Adaptation with Nicolas Cage.
Yep.
Where he plays, I can't remember, was it supposed to be a real-life figure of a guy who's never had a produced screenplay, who's considered like the guru to
like Dave Field?
Buddy screenwriters. Yeah. but a very effective role.
And he's also, bizarrely enough, one of the one of the Wes Anderson players.
I think so.
Because he was in Rushmore. He was in had a small part in Fantastic Mr. Fox. Was he in something else? I have to check.
He's one of those British guys with bad skin who just can be really, really scary when he wants to be.
Exactly. Also on Blu-ray, Kurosawa's Seven Samurai.
Great.
Great, great. You're going to be seeing that soon, eventually. So.
Oh.
And for you fans of Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Canadian film starring Leif Garrett and Adam West, Zombie Nightmare is on DVD.
Man, that sounds good.
Oh, yeah, them's good eatins. We're going to continue on. I thought of you with this because I tend to find headlines from The Onion. Now, you have a crusade against when it comes to albino hitmen.
Oh, yeah.
Or blonde and albino hitmen. Basically, you're defending Paul Bettany's career.
Yeah.
That's not true.
This is something I had on the Film Yep within the last couple of months. It's just about how blonde actors are never considered to be, like, romantic leads in the movies these days. You know, back in the day, we had Steve McQueen, we had Robert Redford, but today there really isn't a blonde superstar sex symbol in the movies. And so I was pointing out that when you do see blondes in the movie, it's usually as psycho killers, like Robin Williams in
1 Hour Photo. That's white hair. That's white haired.
Well, no. That was my whole point. It was like the worse the killer is, the blonder the hair gets.
Oh, I see. Hair.
And Paul Bettany in the Da Vinci Code, the albino killers in The Matrix Reloaded. And actually, just recently in The Girl Who Kicked and Lit on Fire Dragon's Tattoo, etc., the big killer in that is a big blonde guy.
I see. Well, The Onion's got your back. The headline, Nation's Slick Back Hair Men Rally Against Negative Hollywood Portrayal. And look, there's your dude Christian Bale there, Mr. Slagle.
Oh,
that's,
man.
The
Let me see that picture.
Yeah, that's fun.
Now, I'm not a bigot.
Like, you know what? We know you're not a bigot, Juan.
I'm actually all in favor of bigotry against slick back hair guys.
I see.
Just because it's such a stupid look. Riley look.
And blame Michael Douglas for that as well. And by the way, that paper... That's bone. It's not eggshell.
Nice. Very nice.
How can you prefer that to mine?
I don't know. Okay. Oh, by the way, we're choking our, not really choking our guests, but your namesake's birthday is today.
Yes.
Actor Christopher Lloyd turned 72.
Wow. He's getting up there.
He's still working.
And I keep trying to get interviews with him, and they keep getting shot down. He was going to do something with Heartland. Actually, his movie... was going to be some of the other people were going to be featured. And I said, can I get a phone number with them? And
no.
Because, you know, a friend of mine, have I said this before, about my friend of mine from the Orlando Sentinel is film critic Roger Moore.
Oh, yeah, and that actually happened.
And he did a thing a few years ago where he got a live interview with Roger Moore. And the other Roger Moore was very game about it and had a wonderfully funny story.
Sir Roger Moore.
Sir Roger Moore. See, I'm trying to do the same thing with Pam Grier. Why not? All right. Well, Kobe, I guess you got your intro music there.
I got it right here.
Because we talked about a film that came out on DVD and Blu-ray. Go ahead.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Now, you had last week off because of the drive. And,
right.
And since we're going to be done with the drive in about, 11 minutes?
11 minutes.
1-800-233-0020 or WFYI.org. You are getting to watch, sir, Apocalypse Now and Hearts of Darkness. You have to watch Apocalypse Now first.
Oh, yeah.
Then watch Hearts of Darkness.
Okay.
And then go surfing. So there you go. Enjoy
Don't
that.
Don't worry, Toby. Sweet. It's not scary.
Oh, we're not going to...
I don't like
I'm
scary
not,
things.
I'm,
you know this.
I'm not going to harangue you about that until next week because it will be the Friday before Halloween.
I don't want to watch scary stuff.
And you also said disturbing equals scary.
It does.
Really?
Yeah, oh, it totally does.
Totally does. Totally
I will tell
does.
You, in this movie,
don't,
someone
don't,
says
don't tell them.
The word horror.
Oh, that's true, it does.
There is mention of horror.
Yeah. And whores. Well, that's really a matter of debate.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go, Kobe.
Okay.
You have two films to watch this week. All right. as we've touted time and time again, and they're not even an underwriter, but we still give it to them, the Onion AV Club, one of the best news sources for entertainment online, they have helped publish out by Nathan Raven the book My Year of Flops, which I'm really excited. Yes, I with my own straight cash, homie. This started as a twice-a-week column of Nathan Raven writing films that were known for being notorious flops at the box office, and basically giving these films a second chance and breaking it down on... Chris is enjoying recognizing all of the movie imagery on the cover. Would you like to rattle off a few of those titles that you recognize?
I don't remember John Wayne as Genghis Khan. What was
the Conqueror?
The Conqueror.
Oh, I love The Conqueror. It's so bad.
And what was the one with Marlon Brando?
Island of Dr. Moreau. Yes.
Cleopatra with
Elizabeth Taylor.
And it's Arnold Schwarzenegger in something.
Last Action Hero.
Is that supposed to be Madonna?
Body of Evidence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Of course, John Travolta from Battlefield Earth, Kevin Costner from Waterworld, Uma Thurman from The Girl with the Big Thumb movie. I can't remember.
The Girl with the Big... Isn't that the Swedish thing? No, even Cowgirls get the blues.
I can't remember.
Like The Rocketeer.
The Rocketeer.
Howard the Duck is there.
And it's just Santa Claus, so it could be
Santa Claus, the movie.
Oh,
from
wow.
From the 80s, remember
Man,
that?
And that was bad.
That was really bad.
What is that? Is that...
That's Al Pacino in Cruising.
Oh, man.
William Friedkin.
Everyone forgets
William Friedkin
he did that
irritating
movie.
The gay community in 1979.
Right, I'm guessing this is Woody Allen from Scenes from a Mall.
Correct.
Just based on the white suit.
And the ponytail. Yeah, it's kind of bad.
And the usher is just an usher.
Some people are saying that's the author, but he won't acknowledge that. So anyway, this was a twice-a-week column that ran in The Onion for a year, and it went over so well, he's still doing it today. So what I did was I checked inside. There's 52 films that are mentioned, and of the 52 films mentioned, I've seen 41, liked 2, and I own 4. I should say I own 4 of these. So here's the ones of the 2 of the 41 that I've seen, the 2 that I actually liked, Heaven's Gate and Ang Lee's Hulk. Now, of the 4 I own, well, The Conqueror. And the fact that that's not on DVD yet is a travesty.
I think there's a reason it's
no,
not on DVD.
No, you've got to have this. It's I Draw My Sword, Turgutai. I mean, seriously, that's what it is. And it's so not Mongolia. It's so Arizona, Nevada, where all the nuclear testing happened because everybody in that film eventually died of cancer.
Oh.
But, no, there was a DVD collection that Universal put out a while back called John Wayne Collection. It was like Western, and The Conqueror. The problem was I love The Conqueror, but I was not going to spend $60 to get all of those. Now I'm looking for it constantly if it's available used. The Conqueror, The Apple, which is a really bizarre, sick musical.
Oh, wait, The Apple from...
The futuristic musical.
The future that is in Toronto, 1984.
Yes.
I love that movie.
Yes, if you have the right amount of liquid and hallucinogenics.
Oh, no, it doesn't matter.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
All you have to do is love music and film. It's fantastic.
And you can't stop the beat. The Norman Mailer directed Tough Guys Don't Dance with Ryan O'Neal, Isabella Rossellini. Really awful. And I actually own Heaven's Gate. And Heaven's Gate is one I'll say I liked it because it's a really good 2-hour movie. Problem is it's over 3.
Yeah.
And I think Mr. Cimino had, you know, not crippled the studio and got an editor in, it probably would have helped out. But that's, we were talking earlier about how there was so much bad press on Apocalypse When, as they were calling it. Thanks, Rona Barrett.
Because it was delayed so much.
Right. But Heaven's Gate had it even worse. And, I didn't even get a chance to see it when it was in theaters. It died a quick, quick death.
Yeah.
So.
Do they have Catwoman in there?
Well, actually, let's here, let's go.
He's got
it up.
52 movies, huh?
52. And it's not even all the ones. So I'll say a title, and I'm sure I'll get some guttural reaction
from
the our
panel. Say
The
Apple again. I want to talk about
all right,
The Apple.
All right, The Apple again.
Oh, man, that movie is so good.
It's bizarre, man. And this is, you know, this is the same era that brought us Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and Xanadu. Oof. Elizabethtown, this is the one that started it all, Cameron Crowe's film starring Paula Dean and that kid from Lord of the Rings. The Conqueror, we talked about. W.
Jordan. Oh, man.
Yes, Oliver Stone. Neutered Oliver Stone. Kind of missed that. Gospel Road, A Story of Jesus. I know this film because it's produced by Johnny Cash from 1973. O.C. and Stiggs. Great debate over many people consider that one of Altman's lowest pictures, although they've never seen Quintet or Health. But
or
that's
Ready
from,
to Wear.
I like Ready to Wear.
Ugh.
No?
Ugh.
Wow.
Put it back on the rack. Oh, my goodness.
Unwatchable.
Wow, thank you, Mr. Shallot.
Even with the 50 naked girls at the end, it's still unwatchable.
Oh, man. Scenes from a Mall, that's that weird thing of films with Woody Allen not written or directed by Woody Allen, although The Front was good. Cable Guy. That's another one that was marketed badly. It's
yeah.
a dark stalker movie. It's not him talking through his cheeks. It's not. Freddy Got Fingered, which I know Melissa Davis will defend to no end. She can have it. Another film that needs to be on DVD because I heard it's just stunningly bad. Otto Preminger's Skidoo, a drug comedy with Jackie Gleason, Carol Channing, Groucho Marx. I know it sounds like I'm making this up. I'm not making this up. It sounds amazing. Breakfast of Champions, Bruce Willis, Nick Nolte in a dress. The Adventures of Ford Fairlane. Yeah.
Yeah.
He used to sell out arenas. Let's move on. Love Guru.
Ugh.
Awful. Yeah, that was bad. Although I wish all hockey team owners looked like Jessica Alba. They don't. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
The one with the Bee Gees?
Yes.
Okay, let's move on.
Wow, you enjoyed the apple, but you're not gonna go up the bat for that one.
I'm only a fan of like melancholy mid era Bee Gees where the drugs are really.
How do you mend a broken heart?
Yeah,
death.
But that movie is awful.
It is awful. Pennies from Heaven, the depressing musical starring Steve Martin, and first signs of musical prowess from Christopher Walken in that picture. The Apple. Oh, gee, The Apple.
One of the best movies ever made.
What sorority are you in? Oh, God. Glitter.
Oof.
Mariah Carey.
That movie has the guy that plays a DJ can't even fake DJ. That movie is so bad.
Wasn't that Terrence Howard?
No.
Oh.
That's a Don Cheadle joke happening.
Oh, thank you.
But
I know.
Anyway.
Rent, you know, the story of the Bohemian 30-somethings living there.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they're supposed to be 20-something.
Yes.
And Rosario Dawson is the most beautiful smack addict in cinema history. Under the Cherry Moon, directed by Prince. Yeah. The musical version of I'll Do Anything, the James Brooks comedy where they took all the musical numbers out.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Nolte and Albert Brooks. MAME. Yes, somewhere Angela Lansbury is laughing because Lucille Ball got the star in that. It was awful, bad. Island of Dr. Moreau, I saw in theaters. Yeah.
Who directed that?
That was John Frankenheimer.
Wow.
And vowed never to work with him or Val Kilmer ever again.
That was skinny Val Kilmer back then, was it? Or was it almost not skinny Val
He
Kilmer?
Almost not skinny.
Okay.
I think he was hanging out with Marlon too much. Hulk, Ang Lee, of course. You know, superhero with not a comic book hero with dad issues. By the way, Thor's coming out real soon. Last Action Hero. Everybody had to lop off Schwarzenegger at the knees, and that was the one that did it. The Rocketeer,
which is fun.
It has Jennifer Connelly in it.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky Paul Bettany. I actually saw this, and I had to review this. The Real Cancun.
Oh, yeah. God, I remember
I saw that and from Justin Kelly in 1 year.
Yeah.
Life is... work sucks sometimes.
Was that about 8 years ago when you had your daughter? Just asking.
Shut up. All right. Plug the film you have, and we'll give you some words to live by.
TheFilmYouHave.com. It's awesome.
People!
Zardoz has spoken.
Chris, Ben, thanks for hanging out. Did you get it in? Jeez.
Christopher Loy with TheFilmYouHave.com.
That's right. Ben Traub with WFYI.org.
1-800-233-0020. Call up your support now.
Did we make it? All right. Scottish Rite Cathedral tonight, tomorrow, 3 and 7:30 p.m. Plaza Suite, Easley Winery, 1 o'clock, 205 North College on Sunday. Hopefully I'll be there. I'll be there, and hopefully you will be too. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.